touch this thing?
She said don't touch it.
Don't touch it? I'm Wayne. I'm an addict. My wife has her list here. And I've been miserable over doing this meeting for about 2 weeks. And I've been really in a bad spot for 2 weeks. And my history, or the history of me going to relationship meetings, I really can't recall a relationship meeting of a couple that's still together. So it kind of felt like this was time for my wife and I to get a divorce because we were asked to do this meeting. So I'm a little uptight, and but we're really honored to be here. Can I speak on your behalf, too? We are really, really honored to be here. This is a meeting that I've been wanting to do with her for 22 years, and we've only been married for 8. So the most important thing that has been in my recovery has been a relationship, and relationship with one other person, a significant other, that loved me more than anyone else, and that I could love more than anyone else. And it's what's been driving me since I've been able to date. And I couldn't find it using, and I couldn't find it in recovery till now. So is that enough of an introduction? I think I better let her get to her list.
I'm an addict. My name's Amy.
Hi,
everybody. I just want to say that I'm so happy to be here today, especially today, because today's my clean date. And So it's all in my throat right now. So 15 years ago today, I made a choice to live my life a different way, and here I am now. It's just unbelievable to me. Whew. This was my very first convention clean. It was CPR CNA 4 was my very first one. It was the first time that it was down here in Ocean City. Can everybody hear me okay?
Close.
Okay. Move closer. Okay. So, anyway, I feel like I can't see anybody. The microphone's right here. Anyway, I am really glad that the committee didn't ask us any sooner to chair this meeting because we, like, immediately got the call and immediately had, like, the worst fight we've ever had in our lives. So we get the call. We're both like, wow, we're going to chair this meeting. We're going to chair this meeting. And we get into this crazy fight. We're not even living in the same house. We're, you know, sharing the kids and going to work and not speaking to each other for about 4 days until we figure out that, you know, maybe it's this meeting that's intimidating us. So we have this little list of things that we want to talk about. And just because we're nervous and my sponsor said, all I have to do is walk up to the podium and open my mouth and God will take care of the rest. But just in case, I still have a list. So we wanted to talk about where we came from as far as relationships go. I've been clean for 15 years. Wayne's been clean for 22. And enough said about our using. You know, we're here to talk about our relationship. And the place where I came from, my family, I'm a child of immigrants. And so my family, my parents were very hard workers and really wanted to make it in this country. And so that's what I learned, how to be a really hard worker, go to school, do your job, get good grades, and get a good job and get married and live happily ever after. That was the plan. And when I was about 13 years old, I ended up getting high for the first time. And it kind of derailed the whole plan. But what I learned in my family was, and I'm just saying this because my parents are my models. Those are the people who taught me what a husband and wife are supposed to be doing. And my father was the breadwinner, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. So my father was completely responsible for all the earning money, and my mother was responsible for taking care of 4 children at home. And then when I did my fourth step, I figured out that I learned that my parents didn't really talk to each other a whole lot. They each had their own thing to do, and they each did their job, and they didn't do a whole lot of communicating about it. And, you know, they did the job okay, but what I learned was I'm just going to do my job, and I don't have to say anything to him about it, because I'm just doing my job. As long as I get my job done, everything's okay, right? So then when I started having relationships and sex and all that stuff when I was a teenager, when I did my fourth step, I realized that all of my relationships were about sex. They were all about being sexually attracted to somebody and trying to make it into a long-term relationship. So maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. But the only thing, the only criteria for me was that I was sexually attracted to you. It didn't matter if you were a good person or if you treated me well or if we got along well together or any of that stuff. It was all just about, I thought you were cute and wanted to get in bed with you. So so now Wayne's going to talk about where he came from.
I have very similar home life, similar to Amy. My parents have been married 64 years, so I have a model of a mom and dad that have been together through thick and thin. And but I came from a place where I never really felt I fit into that model. I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel part of. And you know, what I was looking for, I didn't get. And I tried to find it in a relationship with a woman. And my relationships, my romantic relationships, have been the same since I first got in one. And I would, like Amy, find somebody that I gelled with, I clicked with, and there was sexual attraction. And if she let me have her, that was even better, you know. And if there was an orgasm and we felt comfortable with it, then that was the basis of building a relationship. And that is the pattern I used before using. That's the pattern that I used when I was using, and that's the pattern I bought into Narcotics Anonymous. We would hook up, you and me, Mary. We would get together. It was good, baby. And, you know, we were going to take it from there. And it just didn't work. It just really, really didn't work. So the pattern that developed in my relationships, in you and I would get together. The sparks would be flying. You know, I had a home. You would move in with me. Everything would be great for 30 or 60 days, and then all of a sudden there would be a problem that comes up in all relationships, and I had no tools or very little tools to work on that problem. I heard about communication. I couldn't communicate feelings. I couldn't communicate feelings in a way that you could hear and that I could feel that I was being heard, and my reaction would be, you have to get the fuck out because this is my house, and I can't deal. But I wanted you, and there was something going on there, and 2 weeks later, I would miss you, and I'd need to have you come back. But we'd had the same problem, and I still didn't have the tools to work through what we need to work through. So, you know, out. It's either my way or the highway. And that's, you know, that's the only tools I had to work with, and they weren't working very well. And at 10 years clean, Amy and I met. And the same thing happened. The same thing happened. We couldn't deal, and I told her to get out. And when I tried to bring her to come back, she said no. And that was a change of the pattern. And she said, and she loved me, she said she was not willing to come back until we got some help with what we needed. We needed to go somewhere to get some tools to work through some things. And you know, I had to make a decision whether to do that. I was scared to even let anybody know that there was something that I didn't know, because I'm supposed to know how to do it all. I'm a big bad guy, you know. I made it through the penitentiary for years. I know how to do it, baby. What I know how to do is to be alone real well. That's the only thing I really know how to do well. I know how to deny myself being with you and being with somebody. I know how to make myself miserable and be alone. That's what I do well. And I had to take a different step. And this is at 10 years clean.
What am I talking about now?
take it from the list.
Should I not touch it? Okay, I'm not touching. You're going to touch it. Thank you. Sorry. Okay. So we were talking at breakfast this morning about, you know, how are we going to do this meeting, and we were trying to give you an idea of, like, what we look like when we're really good and what we look like when we're really bad. And And kind of we wanted to do it like what it looked like when we first started going out and maybe 5 years ago and then kind of what it looks like today. So I'm going to tell the story of really bad 10 years ago. So we had been together 2 years and we went on vacation. And we went to this great, we go to Mexico and we're at this Club Med Sober Village. They closed all the bars down. It's all recovering people, meetings under palm trees. It was paradise. You know, we're here, we're in love, we're by ourselves, we don't have any children yet. So I don't even remember what it was about. I do. I went to work out, I went to exercise, and I wasn't wearing a bra. Woohoo! He said, "Are you wearing a bra?" I said, "I'm not wearing a bra. I'm exercising." So that became this huge argument, and me and Wayne are screaming at each other from one end of the compound to the other end of the compound. What do you think you're doing? You're not wearing a bra. What the fuck does it matter? Blah, blah, you know, on and on and on, okay? And this is a whole, this whole place is full of recovering people, okay? And we are being totally not the picture of recovery at all. So we get to the other side of the compound, and people, some guy down the road is hearing us screaming at each other. And he yells from the bottom of the hill, "Hey, easy does it." Well, that totally, Wayne is like off the hook now, okay? So now Wayne picks up a rock and just hurls it across down below. He doesn't even know who he's hurling the rock at. Well, wouldn't you know, here comes this huge black man. It's Hollywood Henderson. Does anybody remember him? Football player? I don't even remember what team it was. Here he comes, walking up the hill. And here's Wayne was like 170 pounds then, little skinny white boy. And like, oh my God, he's going to get the shit beat out of him. And just then, this little golf carts, they had golf carts that would like take you from one place to another. One comes by, I just hop right on and see you later, I'm gone. So I have no idea what's happening. My husband could be, you know, being pummeled to death. We weren't married yet. We were still dating. But anyway, I immediately can't handle my feelings. So this is my shit. I can't handle my feelings. I'm all upset about this. So I act out. That's my deal. I had quit smoking for like 8 months or something. I immediately went and bought a pack of cigarettes and I'm running around the compound smoking cigarettes. I'm so pissed off. I hate his guts. I hate him. I'm leaving. I'm getting on an airplane. I'm leaving Mexico. Immediately, like, that's just where my head goes. You know, that's the end. It's not like we're going to work shit out. It's just that's the end. So I finally calm down. Finally calm down and I walk back to our room. And here's Wayne laying in the bed, sheets up to his neck, like, you know, this is penitentiary pose. This is Wayne's penitentiary pose. Laying in the bed, and he's got all the furniture down the middle of the room, so he's got his side and I've got my side. And he's not fucking speaking to me. We're in paradise and he's not speaking to me. So then, you know, that's bad enough. Okay, well, I'm not doing this. So then I go and talk to the people who are running the place, and I decide I'm going to get my own room so I can just smoke away in my room all by myself. So that was really bad 10 years ago. We can really laugh at it now, and thank God. But it was very, very painful while it's going on. The whole time I'm thinking we're in this beautiful place. We're supposed to be in love, and we're miserable. So now Wayne's going to tell the story of 5 years ago, miserable.
Hollywood Henderson does remember White Wayne, I can tell you that. I was scared, but I tried not to show it. And, we'll let that one go. But that has been a pattern of in our relationship of when we fight, and it's a regular pattern, and it's happened in the last couple weeks, and there's been episodes over the last 10 years. And what we try to measure is, with the help we've gotten in the last 10 years, and with the tools that we've tried to learn, to measure that story 10 years ago with a story 5 years ago with the pattern we do today. And it still hurts. The place that I go to and that Amy goes to really is lonely. For me, I am at my worst when I'm fighting with my wife. You know, I feel like I'm at my best because I feel self-righteous, I feel entitled, I feel like I don't need her and I'm going to show her. But inside, I'm at the miserable because the person I want to be with the most, I have put away from me. And when I get in arguments, I hurt Wayne more than I hurt my wife because I take the person that loves me and has shown me love and take love away from me. And I guess 5 years ago, Amy's got this list, and she does run the show. I'm the big guy, but she does run the show. So she has made a decision that we will file this list, and I am being attentive to her. So there was a story 5 years ago that, we had our first child, and I like to tell this at meetings. I have a 24-year-old daughter, and, part of my relationship thing was, Mary, now that we're living together, you want to have my baby, because if you said yes, baby, I knew you really loved me and wanted me, you know, but it never happened in my first 10 years of recovery, and I thought, God has given me this daughter. Maybe I do not need any other children. So I kind of put the children thing out. Amy wanted children. I wanted sex. We had children. And I'm willing to have more. But we had our first son, Julian, and that was really a blessing for me. Really a blessing, because at that time I was how old? He's 7. I was 48 years old, so I really didn't think children was going to be part of my story, but a real important part of my story. What was the fight about? She remembers this stuff.
I don't remember. We went to Home Depot and bought some plants.
But the bottom line, the same scenario happened, and she ended up calling 911. Now, of course, I own my own house now, and I know that I can tell a police officer if he doesn't have a warrant, he doesn't have a right to come in my house. Of course, this police officer showed me that he had a right to come in. He came in because he had gotten a call from a domestic quarrel. He threw me to the ground, and he handcuffed me, and that was, 6 and a half years ago, I have 16 years clean, self-employed, own my own home, marriage, child. I'm being thrown down on the foyer of my home and handcuffed and taken to prison or taken to jail. A familiar place to go, but I was a little sick in the van. I'm in the land, and it's all like a lot of younger people, a lot of drunks, a lot of, people that are using. I'm like, what the fuck have I done with myself here? I'm going to a fucking lockup. I'm 16 years clean. I'm 48 years old. I'm arrested. And then part of me is like, I know this woman knows where I had the money stashed in the house. She has the checking account. And, when I get out of this, she'll be gone, the money will be gone, the checks will be gone. And I had also been non-smoking for a short period of time. And, it was a long evening. I was let out on my own reconnaissance. And I immediately, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was in the Glen Burnie lockup. I immediately walked to a 7-Eleven store and, bought a cigar. Because I really needed to reward myself for the things that hurt me the most, when I feel like I need to reward myself, I end up hurting myself more. That's a part of my hurtful, negative behavior, damaging behavior. When I got out of prison, I needed to get high because I deserved it. What I deserved to do was not get high, but, so I really haven't figured that whole thing out yet. So why do we tell that story? That was 5 years ago. Things were still could get pretty messy. And, I love this woman. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. But this kind of stuff has a pattern happen in our relationship. and it's very, very hurtful. And, you know, I would prefer to live with her and get along with her and be happily married with her and not have these kind of things happen. But there's work that I need to do, or it's going to keep on happening.
I'm not touching it.
Make me earn your keep.
So we really got to this place where we didn't know what to do. We kept loving each other, you know, in between all this craziness. We were loving each other and having a great relationship, and our life is good, and we're married, and we have a kid and another one on the way, and we got a stepdaughter living with us, and things can be great, and things can be this crazy. And we don't understand it, and we don't know what's going on. And so we get help. We go get help from somebody who knows how to have a marriage and introduces this this theory to us of a life-giving marriage. Never heard of that before. A life-giving marriage. A situation where two people could love each other and actually bring more love upon each other because we do some work. You know, so we had to learn a whole lot of new tools that we didn't know anything about. The first part was we had to figure out ourselves. You know, like, I had to learn that when I grew up, I felt neglected most of the time. I lived in a family. My youngest brother was born with a really bad birth defect, and my parents were constantly at the hospital caring for him. So I spent a lot of time in my room listening to records and fantasizing. And it's my nature to feel neglected. That's how I feel. So here we are in this relationship. I'm in this relationship with Wayne, and he's not paying enough attention to me. Well, you know, in my old days, if somebody wasn't paying enough attention to me, I'd go sleep with your best friend. How about that? Are you paying attention to me now? You know? So, but that, I couldn't do that anymore. I had to do something different. Like finding my voice and telling him, this is how I'm feeling. We had to learn how to own our own stuff. That was really big stuff for us. Learning how to own your own stuff. So that when you get into an argument and shit, you know how shit just flies when you're arguing. Nobody even knows what you're saying anymore. You just start. And really, I go to this place when I'm arguing with him that I am just almost completely out of my body. I am just saying shit just to say it. And it doesn't even make sense. I just say it because I'm mad. And who knows what I'm saying, but get the fuck away from me. So, you know, I need to know that for me, so I found this man. He tells me that he loves me over and over and over again, and I believe it almost every day, except for when we're having an argument. And he's acting like an asshole. And then I don't believe him anymore. And then my old brain says something to me like, see, he's full of shit. He never loved you anyway. He never loved you. And then I start to panic. And then that's when I want to run. That's when I want to get in the car and drive 95 miles an hour to anywhere at all. It doesn't matter where, but I just want to drive because I just get this like motor that starts in my body. I'm serious. This morning I had a motor going on and I had to go walk on the beach just because I'm like mad. And I have several different ways of acting out my panic. So I'll either get in the car and drive around. I'll scream and yell and, you know, a whole bunch of weird things. I'm capable of smoking cigarettes. You know, I went through that for a long, like 3 years, quitting, starting, all over being angry, getting in fights with Wayne. And I have a thing that I do that I hurt myself. I will take a piece of glass and cut my arm if I'm really out there. Because somehow to me, it makes sense in my sick brain that it makes me feel better. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who can relate to me. A lot of people are going, okay, that's really fucking weird, but I understand, that's okay. So, but that's just, that is where I go, and that is the very painful place that I go to, and I want to lock myself away, and in my mind, it's all over, it never was, and it's all a big joke that somebody's playing on me. Okay, so now Wayne's going to talk about his shit.
What am I talking about now?
Own your shit.
You mean I have shit? You know, and I'd already touched on it a little bit where I go. I came from a home where, on the outside, it looked like we had everything. You know, my folks provided for us. You know, when I was hurt and I would try to express that I was feeling less than or I was hurt or whatever as a child, I was told, look what all we do to you. Look at the good clothes you're wearing. You know, and I'm not trying to beat up on my mom and my dad, because I love my mom and a dad, and I have the best relationship I've ever had with them. I have with them now. I see them on a daily basis. I help my mom. But I need to honor the feelings that I own. And as a child, I owned that I was hurt, and I was lonely, and I was not loved, and I was not lovable. And when it all shut down, there was nobody but Wayne. I grew up in my own home, upper class, middle class, you know, worked, had everything materially. My parents came, they were children of the Depression, so the most important for them to do was to provide for their children the things that weren't provided for them. And I can relate to that, because the most important thing in my life now is to provide to our children what wasn't provided to me, which is, you know, a feeling of belonging, a feeling of love, a feeling of, you know, you're worth enough that I can spend time with you when I get home from work, even though I'm dead tired. And I've been taught when you come home dead tired, you don't have time for kids. That's the pain I carry with me. And, you know, my pain, so I they had this term, in the 60s, a latch-lock kid. Well, I was a latchlock kid the 50s, before it was popular to have two working parents. You know, I raised myself on a television and a street corner. And I know how to do a loan real well, because I've been doing it all my life. When I go to a place, the place I go to is, and I think I'm likable, I think there's people here that like me. I go to a place where I can't reach out to anyone. I can't. Nobody likes me. Nobody wants me. I'm the worst thing that ever happened. I'm unlovable. And I can't share with you that I'm in a bad place. I'm so miserable, all I do to do is go to a place and protect Wayne so I don't get hurt anymore. And that place that I go to, that I've learned to go to, actually hurts me more, because I need you in my life. I need somebody in my life that can, you know, help bring me back out. And, you know, there was a blessing in my life today, because, you know, I was there this morning, and Charles H. called me. He was in Salisbury. He was on his way with his lovely wife, and I was supposed to take care of hotel arrangements, which I hadn't done. He asked me, how you're doing? And I was able to say, not good. I was able to tell somebody that I wasn't doing good. And I was able to tell him that, I don't know, what did I say, that Amy had gone for a walk. I mean, this thing had gotten ugly at 10 o'clock in the morning. Not ugly 5 years ago, because she wasn't called 911, and if she did, I was going to say, come on in, you know. you know, I'm not throwing any rocks at big black guys that aren't there, or, you know, I'm just not going to do it. I kind of learned that lesson a little bit. You know, but we still had this cycle where we go to these places and, you know, and we try to measure it. So it wasn't a comfortable place. She did not cut. She took a walk on the beach. And I was fortunate enough to get a call from a guy that I sponsored that I could let somebody outside of Wayne know what's going on with me. And is that good?
Hey, keep talking.
I've been told to keep talking.
Talk about something good now.
Which is... So what we struggle with doing, with me, I have, I really need to own my part. I really need to look at what Wayne doesn't do well. And the problem, the big problem for me is when I'm not doing well, I don't have the capacity to take a look there. You know, that's my trap. How can Wayne figure out a way that when he's not doing well, that he can trust someone else enough to get hooked back in? And, you know, that's what I really respected about you. You know, you had these feelings about your daughter, and you trusted somebody well enough to call them up and tell them so they could tell you to go the other way. Now, I have problems doing that. I have problems doing that. I just shut down, and I put this wall around me. I'm in the hole with the penitentiary. I'm doing 30 days, and I don't fucking need you to help me. And it's a lonely place for me to be. And, you know, today Charlie helped me by calling me. I couldn't call him. And, you know, here before we're supposed to do this grand meeting, what an honor that my wife and I were thought well enough of the relationship we have to do this meeting. And, you know, 2 hours before, I'm still acting out like I'm 12 years old, you know. You take a turn.
That's your aerobic workout for the day. Okay. So we're at 10 minutes. So what I want to talk about is just that, how good can you stand it? You know, have you heard people say that? How good can you really let it get? And sometimes we get along for really long periods of time. Maybe 3-4 weeks, a month, 5 weeks. No arguments, we just get along great. And then one of us has to do something to just foul it all up. And I think the reason why that is like we can't stand it. You know, neither one of us, because of where we've come from and all the crap in our addiction, we're so used to living like, you know, down, 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 that it's not okay for us to feel good somehow. It's not okay for this to work. It's not okay for it to be successful. And sometimes we just, one of us will just throw a wrench in there just to screw things up. But I want to talk about some of our successes, because together we have, you know, we have managed to be married for 8 years now. And we have managed, both of us, you know, we hear stick and stay around here a lot. And I'm stealing this line from you. Wayne hates that. He says it should be stick and grow and stay. Because it's kind of like the second step. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over again expecting for it to be different. You've got to do something different. And I believe, and we believe, both of us believe, that the reason why we've been able to have a successful relationship is because he has a program and I have a program, and each one of us is willing to do our own work and talk to our own sponsors and not be each other's. And we're willing to grow our relationship. We're willing to grow our marriage. So if he wasn't staying clean, or if he wasn't working a program, or the same with me, our marriage wouldn't be able to work. So two separates to make the whole. And so we have two beautiful, healthy boys. Wayne's got a daughter from another relationship who's 24. She came to live with us when she was 15 years old. She lived with us for 3 years. I thought that was going to be the end of me, okay? But let me tell you, it was so important to Wayne. It was so important because when she was born, he was shooting dope. And for the very first several years of her life, he was sitting in NA meetings. He didn't have time for her. And so when she called us 6 months before we get married and says, "My parents are moving to, my mother and her husband are moving onto a sailboat. Can I come and live with you?" I was like, my life is over. I remember going to that Miracles at Magathy meeting and sitting there like I just had heard that I was, you know, dying or something. And I couldn't possibly imagine getting a 15-year-old. I'm 30 years old. This is supposed to be like happy now. I'm happy. This is my the train has come in, you know. And now I'm going to have to deal with a 15-year-old, who I didn't like very much. So, are you giving me the time sign? Okay, all right. So, I'll just skip over that. So, anyway, the end of that story is that She stayed with us for 3 years. I was a really good parent to her. I learned from in here how to just show up even though I didn't feel like it. I was a really good mother to her. And when she graduated from college, she told me I would have never even gone to college if it wasn't for you pushing me to do something different. And God, that just made my heart really grow. Do you want to talk now? Oh, no? All right, so then the really cool thing that I wanted to talk about is that my parents are from India. I told you that they were immigrants. My parents are from India. I've lived here my whole life. I was born here. And I've always had this kind of like, I'm different than everybody. I look different than everybody. I'm not black. I'm not white. I'm Indian. And I don't know anything about my heritage because my parents moved here in the 50s and, you know, whatever. I've always had this longing to go to India. So this year, this past year in November, Wayne says to me, why don't you go? What? I can't go to India. We've got two kids. We've got a business. He and I have a business together. We share days. We work together. You know, well, I can't do this. I've got to wait 10 years till the children grow up. He's like, no, it's time to go. My father was real like, I wanted to travel with my father and two of my uncles. My uncles bagged out. My father bagged out. Wayne helps me write a letter to my father. He can be very touching. And he helped me write this letter to my father like, please, please take me to India and show me the country of my ancestors. You know, oh, I was just crying writing it. Well, anyway, my dad gets the letter. He says, let's buy tickets. So we were going to go for 2 weeks. Wayne says, go for three. Go. I'm going to take care of the kids. I'm going to take care of the business. You don't have a worry in the world. Go. So can I just tell you how incredible that trip was for me, like this huge piece of the puzzle that was missing in my life to go with my father, who I never really felt had any time for me my whole life, to spend 3 weeks, November 7th to December 1st, traveling on a train, 11 cities all over the country of India. Him showing me where he grew up, the playground where he played, the school where he went. Every day I call home to my loving husband. Hi, hon. I'm in some crazy town. There's cows in the street. And every day he would say to me, I'm really glad you're having a great time. We're all doing great. Not once did I get I wish you'd hurry up and get back here. You didn't take care of enough things. You didn't give me the right list. Ah! You know, I didn't hear any bitching at all. I heard, I'm so glad you're having a great time. I'm so happy I can do this for you. And to me, that is what a life-giving marriage is all about.
I want to say something smart-ass here about being a white guy or something, but, you know, I love you. And it was a gift to me to be part of seeing you have a dream come true and to be a part of that. And I felt so good the 3 weeks that she was away because I was part of my wife, the woman I love, living her lifelong dream. And it really felt good. And so I want to thank you for giving me that gift of participating in, you know, I'm happy that I have the love that I have today and the partner I have today. And a couple things that really drive me is the gift of the two children, the two boys you've given me. Because I carry so much of Wayne being hurt at 4, 5, 6 years old. I still have these messages here, and I have the opportunity now not to carry those messages on. And it's a struggle. You have given me something to struggle for on a daily basis to be a better father, to give to our boys something better than it was given to me. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to me when I don't feel like hugging that kid. The hugging. And I tell you, there are times I am just too tired and not giving enough that don't want to do it. And I really heard about really not giving that message that you're not lovable and you're not. That's a gift. And, you know, I don't have a lot of recreational things I enjoy doing. I enjoyed shooting dope I thought an exciting time was driving out Route 40 and hitting myself in the wrist while I was driving. You know, that was, you know, that was my athletics. That was my recreation. And so it's been a problem when I've come into recovery that I really don't have any hobbies that I enjoy doing. I enjoy sex and I enjoy hanging out. But there's really I've really never developed. I really didn't have I didn't have a childhood. I didn't develop any really, really strong likes. I had a friend of mine in a program take me to a Maryland basketball game 6 years ago at Cole Fieldhouse. Yes. And a ref made a bad call, and 12,000 kids yelled, "Bullshit! Bull!" My nipples got hard, you know? This... Huh? Anybody there with me, you know? I was like, this is great. You know, I feel this is great. You know, I never particularly care for basketball. Too many black guys, you know. I'm not an athletic type of guy, but for something, this really hooked on me. And I am scared to fly. I'm a big guy that's scared to get on an airplane. And here's what my wife has done for me. She encourages me to go. I was here at, where was this, Anaheim? When we beat Stanford, baby. I came out of the parking lot. We were the underdogs. There was only 100 people from Maryland. There was all Stanford people. We won. I called her in tears, in tears. She was on a woman's retreat. She says, "He's crying." All the women started crying, you know. I found something I enjoy doing. And, you know, and what I really, really enjoy doing is just being married to you, being a father. You know, I have my Maryland basketball, and we're trying to build a home. You know, we've been so blessed. We really have. We have a waterfront home. And, you know, I used to look out on the Forest Street. You know, that was, you know, just to even have my own home or have our own home, but to have a home on the water. And, you know, when I'm in a good spot, I can just look out and the water energizes me. It just energizes me. And my life, the best thing I have going on is that I know that I'm loved. I know that I'm loved. I know that I can go to that place that is really painful for me, and I come out of there, this woman still loves me. It's been 10 years, and she still loves me. I've never felt so loved. And I can go to spots where I'm really unlovable, and she still loves me, and she's still there when I come out of that spot. And, you know, my challenge to Wayne is, you know, for the benefit of myself, my wife, and our sons, is to find a way not to go to that place. Really, really, you know, recovery's great at 22 years. Really is great. I have really been blessed, but boy, there's some work still to do. There's still some work to do. I got to wrap it up. So, thanks.